Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to The Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
It doesn't get any smoother than this. This is The Andy Finn Show, and this is Finn Man and Robin. And Robin, we're in the second half. Today is the 22nd of December, and on this day, the sporting goods manufacturers received permission to use synthetic rubber for the core of baseballs for the first time in 1943. And when I read this item, my thought was, okay, they received permission. From who? Who did they have to get permission from to use synthetic rubber? This
the
item,
baseball commissioner?
Well, you see, I think what they mean is for professional baseball. Uh-huh. Right? Because they're making baseballs for everything. But they have to be saying the baseballs they're making for professional baseball. And typically, there's only one sporting goods manufacturer makes them. They give the contract to Rawlings for a few years, then they give it to somebody else.
Hmm.
But it has to be, they have to be talking about professional. And what else happened on this date?
Well, Kenny Jones of Faces became the drummer for The Who in 1978.
You know, I didn't see that item because I didn't look up the music stuff. But Robin knows The Who is near and dear to my heart. And the Kenny Jones period was not The Who's highlight because they just lost Keith Moon that year, and Kenny Jones is a solid, steady drummer, but he's not quite in the Keith Moon style. For a lot of people, that wasn't the best version of The Who. Not the way Zach Starkey is very much in The Who mode, the Keith Moon mold, which is why since 1996, since he joined them, Pete Townsend says it feels more like the old band than ever. And why he continues to tour even though he's pushing 64. Also on this date, this was an interesting item. In 1864, during the American Civil War, General Sherman, of course everyone knows his name was William Tecumseh Sherman. I like saying that, Tecumseh. He sent a message to President Lincoln from Georgia, and it read, "I beg to present you as a Christmas present the city of Savannah." Now, I think Lincoln was too serious a guy. He probably didn't think that was very, you don't take cities for presents, you know. In war, you have to do what you have to do. Well, of course. Well, you wouldn't. You're too gracious. You wouldn't refuse a gift.
No.
You know.
Absolutely not. And you still have to come up with one, don't you?
Hey, I've got you covered.
New York City.
I've got you covered. In any case, let's go back to Biden and Cheney. So, the current vice president, Dick Cheney, and the incoming vice president, Joe Biden, were both on Sunday talk shows on Sunday. And what was interesting was I couldn't tell. Cheney responded to something Biden said. And so you never know whose is recorded first because they're both recorded on Friday, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're both recorded on Friday. So I assume that Cheney had a chance to respond to what had been recorded and released from Biden. But Biden was on with George Stephanopoulos on This Week and on ABC. And Cheney was on, what else, Fox News. He doesn't go anywhere else. He has a friendly audience. Chris Wallace handled him pretty much with kid gloves. He would ask the initial tough question, but Cheney didn't have to answer him. Now, keep in mind that Dick Cheney has given an interview, he gave another interview last week to ABC, I think it was, and over the course of these two interviews, he basically said that we were right to go into Iraq. It didn't matter that there were no weapons of mass destruction. We were going in anyway, which kind of made news on some of the networks because no one had really...
It was a contradiction, wasn't it, of what Bush said?
Absolutely. Now, it was Wolfowitz came out at one point and said, look, we had to come up with one reason. So we fixed the policy around the WMD because that's the one reason everybody could agree on. But the bottom line is the message from that was they were going in. That's not news to me. I knew they were going in. I knew Bush wasn't serious when he said war was his last resort. It was obvious they were going in. They were massing the troops. They were setting it up. They were doing everything to suggest they were going to war. Going to the UN was just a little speed bump that they had to slow down for. But they never intended to let the inspectors do their job, and they didn't. So Cheney believes that we would have gone anyway. He also defended what he called robust interrogation. I'd like to see if how he took to robust interrogations. Basically, he defended the torture, claims it's not torture, claims that these guys were never entitled to rights under the Geneva Convention. I mean, they're basically sticking to the old line. And the country has rejected that. I mean, they may have rejected it for economic reasons, meaning they may have rejected the Republicans for the economy. But Obama came in very clearly, and Biden as his VP is very clear, and he was in the interview yesterday, that we have lost standing in the world because we say that not everyone is entitled to Geneva Convention protections, and that it's okay to torture people if we think they're evil enough. The problem with that is you're leaving it up to the president to decide. And, you know...
And the vice president.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. But the executive power that Bush has claimed is that he can declare anyone, even an American citizen, an enemy combatant. Well, I know he probably wouldn't, but that implies he could come into your house or my house and say, I think you're an enemy combatant, cart us off to Guantanamo and keep us without lawyers. Now, they've changed those. Now, they can't keep them without lawyers for very long, all this stuff. But he's claiming that he has the power to do that. Now, Republicans say, oh, well, don't worry, he'll be reasonable. He wouldn't come to your house. He would only do it if he had a good inclination that somebody was an enemy combatant. Well, we had over 750 people at Guantanamo Bay, and at least a third of them were completely innocent, and we knew that early on, and we had trouble releasing them. That is, we couldn't be sure. Well, some of them we couldn't send back to their home country because they were dissidents there and might be tortured. So the Uyghurs that we're dealing with right now, which are dissident Chinese from the west of Chinese, they want independence for their area of China. And if they go back to China, they very likely will be tortured. So we have to find another home for them. But at least 250 people were completely innocent. What happened was we put a bounty on people's heads and said, bring us a terrorist, $5,000 apiece. Well, in Afghanistan, that's a tremendous amount of money. So people were turning in the neighbors they were feuding with and the people they had problems with, but not terrorists. So we rounded up all these people, carted them to Guantanamo, gave the country a black eye because everybody you lock up, you could produce some terrorists in their family or from them when they get out. And it just is not the way we do business. So Dick Cheney's argument is everything changed after 9/11. And that...
The high point of the administration, he called
it. Well, that was an unfortunate reference, but it's worth mentioning that. He was asked by
Chris Wallace,
what was the high point of your administration? And he thought, and he said, well, he didn't really say the high point would have to be, right? He said, well, certainly the central
thing. Said, well, first he said that, well, it would have to be, and then he explained it afterwards. But it was, for him, it was a high point. It was clear.
Well, it clearly was the focal point of the administration, and the defining moment of the administration.
But not a high point.
Not a high point. Well, I'm going to cut him just a tiny bit of slack there. Meaning, we could get all over that, but I agree with you.
Moment.
Here's the thing is, what's interesting about that, I think, is that Dick Cheney doesn't have any high points. That is, I mean, you might say, oh, it was exhilarating the day I was inaugurated or something, right? Exhilaration and Dick Cheney don't really go together, you know?
No.
He's pretty low-key.
Or when the statue of Saddam was toppled.
Well,
that's
right. He could have chosen something like that. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. But
he couldn't find it.
That's true. That's true. He couldn't find it. He could have said, our re-election, I was vindicated.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could have said the day that he took over the powers from George W. Bush and basically became the de facto president.
And he said that, well, if Biden wants to diminish the powers of the vice presidency,
that's up to him. Yeah, don't get me started, but I'm started now, so let's talk about that. Well, it strikes me, Robin, that what he was saying there was he must have heard Biden's interview. Now, Biden may have been saying the same thing for several days, but in the interview with ABC, Biden said that he would not be the same type of VP. Mm-hmm. Right? He said that he wanted to restore the proper balance to the vice presidency, meaning that Dick Cheney has taken way too much power to himself and Bush has allowed it, and that it's time to move on and get back to some kind of balance. The kind of thing Biden talked about, and Biden gives detailed answers to questions. Cheney just says yes or no. Cheney says, well, I disagree, but he never explains himself. That's the thing that bothers me about Cheney when you read these interviews. He talks in generalities, but he never really explains himself. And so when he was asked a variety of questions, his answers are just weird to me. But what Biden said was, look, when I met with Obama, we spoke for over 3 hours before I took the VP slot, and I said, I don't want you to give me a project. And most, you know, new VPs get a task force or a project to work on, but that's all they get. He said, I want to be an advisor.
Well, he did get the task force for the middle class.
Yeah, well, he doesn't mind getting the task force. He just didn't only want that, which is what some vice presidents get. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that he used the term advisor, but what he said was, I assume you're choosing me for my judgment. I want to be there when you're making decisions. I want to be able to give you my counsel. And Obama assured him he would have a seat at the table for all major decisions. And he said so far he has, that on each of the appointments, Obama's asked him what he thought. So that's Biden's given his piece and saying that, you know, he's not going to have the kind of vice presidency Cheney has. And if you're unaware somehow of what Cheney has done with the vice presidency, you know, they said Al Gore was the most powerful VP in history, right? He had the Reinventing Government initiative. That was that task force.
And the internet. Don't forget that.
Oh, he invented the internet. No, he helped spearhead the National Information Infrastructure, the NII, and oversaw the authoring of two important white papers. You can still get on the web that that highlight all of this. But
was he involved with getting the environment back on track back then, or not so much?
Well, he was very much a fan of the environment. I think Clinton gave him three projects, and I think one was environmentally oriented. Mm-hmm. But Clinton did not give him a seat at the table. He was not an inner circle guy. Most VPs were never inner circle. And in fact, Cheney didn't particularly like going to all the meetings and being in the inner circle that way. He wanted to have Bush's ear. So Cheney was an unusual vice president. And to say that if Joe Biden wants to diminish the office of vice presidency, what a laugh this is. Because what really was going on is that one of the things that will be written about George W. Bush is that he was one of the weakest presidents in history. And for all the talk that Republicans have that Jimmy Carter was a weak president, Jimmy Carter never let Walter Mondale make decisions and run separate projects out of the vice president's office. And he wasn't easily swayed by Mondale. And Bush has taken on many of Cheney's ideas and policies, so that Cheney is able to do what he did only because he had a very weak president. And that story isn't written, because when conservatives talk about Bush, they think, oh, he's so resolute, that makes him strong. No, he came in tabula rasa. He had no concept of what of the world. He didn't have a foreign policy. He didn't care about that stuff that much.
He didn't care about governance either.
Right. And so then 9/11 happens, and he relies on Cheney for a lot of things. And so if you didn't see that four-part series in the Washington Post, it wasn't last summer, it was probably the summer before, maybe it was last summer. Yeah. A wonderful explanation of how much power Cheney has had over the last 8 years. Now, admittedly, Bush allowed him to have it, but that doesn't, A, make it right. That is, there's an imbalance there.
And wasn't he saying, yes, in that interview with Chris Wallace, didn't he say something about, well, the vice president, he was explaining that he's not accountable for anything and you can't be, do you remember what that?
Well, you know, I don't remember exactly what he said to that part of it, but what I do remember about it was that he He had a thing a few months ago where he refused to turn over to the archives, National Archives, records. And you're supposed to regularly turn over records, and he refused. And he claimed he didn't come under the executive branch orders. He said, I'm part of the legislative branch. But when he wants to be, doesn't want to be under legislative branch orders, he says he's part of the executive branch. And so he's trying to make the case that he's not under either, which is absurd.
Depending on the instance.
Depending on what works best for him. So pundits and comedians had a pretty good time with that. Basically, he's out there in the Twilight Zone, claiming that he is neither particle nor wave, you know. He's both. He's light itself. Oh, man. Well, look, we're going to leave the world of Dick Cheney at least momento.
Long farewell, our feeders saying goodbye.
Yes, indeed. We may come back to it. We may not. But in the meantime,
do you feel inferior? Do you sometimes think that you're not as bright as the rest of us? The Andy Finn Show has the cure. Listen to stories about some real idiots. Yes, it's time for another edition of Wackos, Bunkos, and Locos. Tales of the not-so-bright among us.
Okay, Robin, what do we have in the way of tales of the not-so-bright among us?
Well, let's see. We'll start with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Questionable judgments. In September, Atlanta-area educator Philippia Faust, working on a $455,000 annual federal sex education grant, offered a $10,000 contest prize for an engaged local couple who had so far abstained from sex and would continue to do so until the wedding. Any sex would be risky behavior, said Faust, but worst of all would be living together before marriage, which is a setup for the kill. However, despite the large population of the area, she had no takers. And as the deadline approached, she told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that she even considered opening the contest to engaged couples who had had sex, but regretted it. Faust eventually had to scrap the contest altogether because of conflicting federal grant rules.
Well, you aren't allowed to give away money for no sex? That's a weird one. But indeed. It's understanding. It's like the search for an honest man, you know. It's hard to find.
A good man is hard to find. Well, here's another one. Well, slap my thigh. In the June 13th, 1995 mayoral election in Sutton, West Virginia, Edgar Given by 2 votes. In the recount, however, Edgar won by 6.
How is that possible?
West Virginia.
It could happen. Well, in fact, we're going to find in a couple of days that Al Franken's going to win by a couple hundred votes, and that's going to upset the right because they are convinced he's stealing the election.
I wonder if Edgar Given did.
Anything's possible in West Virginia. We'll ask Joe Rolls. Joe is one of my Toastmasters buddies, and you may have met him at the party, but maybe Joe wasn't there. But Joe every speech he gives is about his time in West Virginia, and he's got this down-home style. He's very humorous. But it's a weird world the way he tells it.
Any more wackos?
I don't have any more wackos, so that will whack us out. I do want to move on to a couple of controversies. One of the controversies is, well, I guess I should wrap up this whole thing about Bush and Cheney and their victory tour. Now, we will discuss the first 2 weeks of January, our own review of the Bush administration's greatest hits and misses.
Don't blame me.
I won't, but I might blame him. But we're gonna cap it here, except to say that one of the things that Bush has been out touting, and Cheney, is that they have kept us safe since 9/11. There have been no terrorist attacks, and they take credit for it, that their methods have done it. And, of course, that's what they like to call the terrorist surveillance program. That's surveilling all of us, although they claim that they're surveilling terrorists primarily. And the...
But how did my four-pound Yorkie Button surveils my front and barks all the time, and there hasn't been one attack by a chipmunk since I've lived there, a year and a half.
And you haven't had a burglary, have you?
Not a burglar. Nothing.
So he's kept you safe from democracy.
She has, little Button.
She has kept you safe from democracy.
She has.
And George Bush and Dick Cheney have kept us safe from democracy. But yeah, and that's the point, is you cannot prove the negative. You know, by those standards, Bill Clinton kept us safe.
Absolutely.
After the attack in 93 on the World Trade Center. But you never hear really Bush and Cheney making that argument. Well, you can't prove the negative. It's great that we haven't been attacked. I'm not quite ready to give him credit. And I guess this is the reason, is that Biden's point in this interview, and I come down on Joe Biden's side, is that the actions of the Bush-Cheney administration have made us less safe. Going into the Middle East, plopping 150,000 troops down there is only going to stir up resentment among Muslims, right? And so the question is, what good does it do for us to stay there? Osama bin Laden's main beef with us was that we had 12 bases in Saudi Arabia that we were semi-permanent bases. We had no intention of leaving after the Gulf War in 1990. That's why we had 9/11. That was his main concern. Now, we don't know for sure he wouldn't have attacked us otherwise, but we had troops, infidel troops from their point of view, in the country that had the two holiest shrines in Islam. And in fact, although people say, oh, Bush doesn't back down from terrorists, although he put 150,000 troops in Iraq, he quietly withdrew all the troops from Saudi Arabia. We gave up all those bases in Saudi Arabia, which is what Osama bin Laden wanted us to do. And you never hear anything about that. So the Bush-Cheney argument is, well, we were muscular and we showed them how tough America can be, and that's what is needed. You got to show them strength, and that's what wins. You don't win friends, but you win respect. And Biden and Obama's attitude is, no, what you do is you walk softly and carry a big stick, as Teddy Roosevelt said. You speak softly. You don't attack countries to establish democracy. You negotiate, you talk, you work things out. It doesn't cost you the hundreds of billions of dollars that way. And the lives, and you make more progress. Biden made the point that our actions have created more terrorists than we stopped. And I suspect that's true. And people were saying that at the time. Hosni Mubarak, the head of Egypt, president of Egypt, said it in about 2003, that going into Iraq would produce 1,000 bin Ladens. I think that was his phrase. If it was someone else's phrase, he made the point in another way, that this was going to produce more terrorism than it stopped. And so
that, coupled with Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo.
Well, the other problem is that when you go to war, it's going to be messy, and that's the excuse that Cheney and Rumsfeld had every time something went wrong. But you know that going in. It's why Colin Powell said you break it, you own it. You should think twice before you go to war, because it's going to be messy. And we aren't usually willing to use the brutal tactics that others are willing to use in war. And so, we end up coddling the enemy, as some people think. But, of course, that's what has won the respect we have won in Iraq. To the extent that people trust American soldiers over there, it's because we don't kill indiscriminately. And while there have been a few cases like that have happened, and we've got the Blackwater problems and things like that, in general, we don't act the way the insurgents act. And so we've won a lot of the local people over. But in terms of world perception of us, and even our perception in England and Europe, when Obama comes in, the standing of the U.S. will go way up. And you can say what you want about that. Bush and Cheney can say, well, that's unfair, that, you know, they just didn't understand. But the bottom line is, that's what's going to happen, is that the world is sick of the United States doing things the way Bush and Cheney do it. And Bush and Cheney said, well, you can't worry about what the world thinks. No, that's exactly what you worry about, is what the world thinks. That's how you get along in life.
Andy, why was George Bush, like his father, was so loyal? I mean, he was loyal to the point of stupidity, for example, to Rumsfeld.
Yeah, I mean, Cheney thinks it was a mistake to fire Rumsfeld. He advised Bush to keep him on. So Bush may have kept him on a year longer than he otherwise would have because Cheney was a strong supporter. Cheney helped bring him into the administration. Mm-hmm. Of course, Cheney was the transition guy that was in charge of picking the vice president for that administration, if you remember. Huh. And he ended up picking himself.
That's right.
No, well, Bush chose him. But I think that there's a general tendency of presidents to be loyal. I think Carter was too loyal to people. It's hard to
George
cut
Herbert
people
Walker.
Loose. Yes, definitely. Reagan was. It's hard mm-hmm. to cut people loose that have served you well. You know them well. You know that in their hearts they're doing good work, doing a heck of a job, Brownie. Mm-hmm. But a president has to learn that it can affect how much you can get done. And so anyone's expendable except the president himself. And maybe the Secretary of State when she's Hillary Clinton. But Bush he has a stubborn streak, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's going to tend to he sees the world in black and white. So if I've chosen the right guy, then it'd be wrong to get rid of him, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But I think most presidents are a little stubborn. It'll be interesting to see if Obama has this ability to cut people loose fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. I think Clinton learned how to do that because it just causes you trouble. Mm-hmm. And you can't really salvage it once the person's been damaged in whatever way they've been damaged. So it's tricky that way. Well, let's spend the last couple of minutes on this issue of Reverend Rick Warren of the Saddleback Church. Obama has chosen him.
I thought you didn't like that issue.
Well, it's worth... There's been a lot of talk about it in the media. And it's interesting, the two camps about it. The gay community is out there outraged, saying that he is an intolerant zealot who has no place on the stage with Barack Obama since Democrats won and gays supported Obama. And the other side says, basically, let's be reasonable. He's one of the more moderate of the evangelical voices out there. Mm-hmm. And an interesting thing occurred today, and that's why I think we're covering it. I overheard on the air that the website for the Saddleback Church has changed their content today, and they have removed some of their more strident anti-gay rhetoric and replaced it with more conciliatory, inclusive language. Rick Warren had been making charges at the time of Proposition 8 in California that it would prevent preachers from speaking out against gay marriage in their pulpits, which is not true, but he was making those claims. So the other thing the gay community were saying is that he was lying about the issue. Mm-hmm. And he also has compared
to pedophilia,
gays to pedophilia. That is, if you're going to let
incest.
Men marry men, what about... What about a father marrying your daughter or an older person marrying a child? Mm-hmm. Well, those are well-known crimes, mm-hmm. and to put gay behavior in that category offended most gays. Barney Frank came out today and said Obama made a mistake. But the bottom line is that what Obama's trying to do is he is moving in the direction of inclusiveness. So whether he's reaching out for voters in 4 years or whatever, this may be his sister soldier moment in a way. He didn't really have one during the campaign, except he did distance himself from Reverend Wright, but only by force. But if you remember sister soldier, Clinton distanced himself from this black rap artist. She said something fairly offensive about white people, and Clinton dissed her and distanced himself from her, so it made it look like, oh, he's not in the pocket of the black community. He can stand back from them and he can separate himself and tell those folks, you don't have my support on all things. And so it may be that Obama's being that cynical. It may simply be that he's thinking I want to reach out to evangelicals. It's always good to have more voters on your side, but also just, you know, he is trying to be inclusive. So we'll see how it goes and what happens. But Rick Warren will be there because I know Obama's not going to change his mind about this one. Well, Robin, that'll do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. Today's the 22nd. We got Christmas in 3 days. We'll be back in 1 week. Unlike the Vandalay House Party boys who are not showing up next week, we'll be here, won't we?
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to it.
It'll be the end of the year. By then, there'll be lists out. And when those lists come out, we will go with a few of them. We'll have to see what the end of the year. We'll have to come up with our best whatevers, our best movies, our best somethings. In any case, that'll do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. We'll be back next week, which is the 29th, with our end of year show. A little Merry Christmas, Robin.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
And until next week, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.